Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
We have no standards. You're watching a cage fight, you barbaric loser.
Pete Thamel.
So I just Googled calf cow recruiting just to see if there were any examples of that. And I got an article from Beef Magazine. Treat your cows like five-star recruits.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Oh, the swim paparazzi, relentless.
And here's Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod. Hope everyone is doing well. We are entering important time for sports in America. And we're not expecting a lot of college football news on this, decisions, at least until the end of the month when the ACC, SEC, Big 12 are going to make a call on the season, at least whether they're going to scale back or not. I certainly do not think that you guys can jump in and correct me if you're wrong, but I don't think it's going to be a dramatic, maybe non-conference goes, maybe it doesn't. I think this is going to carry into August on decision-making and things like that. But what we have coming forward here in the next 2 weeks is Major League Baseball and their plan going live. They're already doing these interleague or little games, exhibition games. You see this stuff? They had the social distance dugout. You sit in like the stands. The guy's got to sit in the stands under a tent.
Got plenty of room to spread them out.
Plenty of room, yeah. I don't know if you saw, I think it was Wrigley Field did a guess the attendance. It's like 160 people or 40,000 or whatever they usually fit. Guys are wearing masks at the plate. Man, it's kind of intimidating. Imagine that. Yeah. The masked men. This could be something like in pro wrestling. Parts unknown, weight unknown, the mask, you know, like.
You already got, you got a batting helmet. You got the armor they wear now too on the arms and stuff and the leg and everything. And now you're going to add a mask to the matter too.
They're doing it. NBA is in full quarantine. They are in the bubble. Lots of reports from the bubble. They're going to try to get going in the next couple weeks. The National Hockey League, the other major team sport out there, is preparing to enter their multiple bubbles. They have a Toronto bubble and an Edmonton bubble. Do you care which one you go to? If you're in a bubble, does it matter? So all of a sudden, Edmonton sound good. Oh no!
I just think you're going to have a better hotel in Toronto, right?
You might.
Like, I got to say, the biggest news to come out of the NHL recently is their decision to put the broadcasts on a 5-second delay. I don't think college football needs to follow this. I want to hear some cussing on the sidelines. They looked at the soccer leagues with some F-bombs flying, and they don't want to do it. But I hope football doesn't follow hockey there.
Yeah, I do not want this. They don't do that in the UFC, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
And the hockey That's players, so silly. We swear it in Russian and Latvia and all. I mean, come on. Estonia.
To try to protect everybody's dainty ears from what actually happens on the field, that's just silly. Come on.
We're watching a hockey game here.
Yeah, right.
This is why the UFC is the best. They just own it. Yeah. We have no standards. You're watching a cage fight, you barbaric loser. Not only that, you paid us $70 to watch this thing. Of course, we're going to swear in the post game, during the game.
This isn't professional hopscotch.
Like, I know. Yeah. What are you doing? I'm just expecting much better decency out of my cage fighting. Anyway, this is the next level. Okay, we got the UFC, we got NASCAR, we got golf back, we got some of these. MLS is going. This thing seems to be working, but I don't have the time to try to figure out the MLS. Okay, it'd be like a newcomer trying to learn college basketball. It'd be too much. Yeah. It's like 330 teams. It's like 80 teams are in this some kind of crazy tournament that need a damn abacus to figure out what's going on. I don't know. I don't care. There's just these random soccer games on all day long.
Did you hear MLS? Sankey in that SEC interview, just like in his like classic Sankey monotone, go, I've watched more MLS in the last week than I have ever. Because he's talking about like scouting the bubble. It was just like the perfect like dig.
I'll let Sankey watch it for me. Yeah.
You want to watch MLS? I just don't have time to figure it out.
No.
Do you think Sankey'd be busy, too busy to be watching the MLS?
You would think.
He just wants to see how it looks and works, empty stadium. Yeah. He's big on, like, let's learn and watch from everyone else.
It's like the field behind where the NBA's playing. Like, yeah. One of my daughters had a soccer tournament down there in February. It's like the same field. Like, really? All right. Why are they playing outdoors in Orlando in the middle of July? God.
Are they at risk of tripping over randomly discarded Bush Light cans, Dan?
Could be.
From you attending your daughter's soccer games.
Our team was
Bush Light
not,
Apple.
We did not win the championship that weekend, but we certainly, you know, they're over at the Fairfield Inn and Suites in Kissimmee. Might still be some empties by the pool.
They're not
I don't know
Fairfield
where they're.
In
I don't know
Kissimmee.
What the MLS bubble is, but it's probably not as nice as the NBA bubble.
It's probably not the NBA bubble, but it's probably also not the Fairfield Inn in Kissimmee. I'm going to go with that.
And then the NFL. So this is basically the NFL is coming up with different things. Are we going to have one preseason game? Two? I don't know. They have finally come to an agreement. They're going to COVID test daily. The players wanted. That's going to be costly. So look, what happens the next couple of weeks is going to be big. You know, what are we going to have here? And I what do you think works? What's your definition of working? That's, you know, that's the big question for college football. Is it one guy gets sick? We got to shut things down. Is it 10? I still not sure. There's been some guidance from the NCAA, but do we have to listen? When have we ever listened to those guys? I don't know what it is. NFL, I feel like, is just going to try to plow through this sucker and go. I think the NBA will work. I think the NHL will probably work. A, they're going in a bubble, and B, they're going where there's no disease. That's pretty sharp. Like, hell, let's go. Northern Alberta. Let's do it. Yeah. College football doesn't have that luxury. And so we're not pessimistic here. We're not optimistic. We're realistic, trying to give you the real thing. If you're too sensitive, too snowflakey, you can't hear that this could possibly be played or that it could possibly not, then go find another podcast. We're here to break it to you, tell you the truth. I mean, I can't stand anyone who sits there and says, well, the NBA is playing, college football should be playing, or the people who run college football are just wusses. Like, it's two totally different operations.
Completely different.
The NBA has 22 teams, 30 guys per traveling party. That's it. There's obviously another, that's 660. A lot of these teams will be gone in the first month. There's obviously additional media and all that. They're spending over $150 million just for this. College football, 660 people is like three or four college football teams if you're taking their whole travel party. I mean, it just ain't going to work. So what are your thoughts on where we're at, what you're hoping to see in the next couple of weeks? And more importantly, what is the definition of works? Because I am neither sitting here telling you, I guarantee you this should go or everyone's horrible. And I'm not sitting there saying there's no chance because I think we're going to try. But where are we in the middle here?
Well, Dan, I think the definition of work is fairly clear to me. It's not starting, it's finishing. Now, it's in it's finishing in college football. Ultimately, the season works if it finishes with the college football playoff being played, because that's a couple hundred million dollar sweetener for a sport just dying for revenue right now. You got sports getting cut left and right. You have furloughs happening everywhere. So if you can design some semblance of a season, 8 games, 10 games, 9+1, however you want to do it, and you can design it safely enough to have, and forget the other bulls, no offense. You just need a playoff. That's really what is going to be that's really going to be the important thing here. If you can design it and have it be completed and have four teams emerge for a playoff, or if you're feeling frisky, you can have a New Year's Six to fulfill the contractual obligations, because the playoff TV contract is not just the playoff. It's all the other stuff sort of roped in. If you can do that, then I would say it works. Now, I don't care if it works in the fall. I don't care if it works in the winter. I don't care if it works in the spring. But like, you have a multi-billion dollar industry hanging on the work part of this, meaning the season is completed in some form.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the payoff would be at the end, and that's the literal and figurative payoff would be then. I think there's so much to answer about whether things will work well enough to even start. You know, do we get to that point? And that's why, Dan, that's why you brought up all this, is because I think these next couple of weeks, everybody is like Greg Sankey sitting out there watching, okay, How's the NFL doing? How's the NBA doing? How's MLB doing? How are our full scale workouts on campus going? And then you factor in, okay, what happens when we bring in tens of thousands of NARPs, non-athletic regular people, to campus, the student body, to, you know, completely complicate everything. There's all those factors have got to go into it. Then we can, all right, can we start? When are we starting? Are we starting Labor Day weekend? Are we starting September 19th? Are we starting October 1st? And then, yeah, what constitutes working from that point? Can we play a sustained season going through it? And one of the things that came out of the NCAA guidelines and the Power Five guidelines was both the potential for a 14-day quarantine if a player tests positive for anybody who came in close contact with that player in a high-risk sport like football. And that could paralyze everything. You know, that could take out two teams for 2 weeks. Texas A&M plays Mississippi State or something on September 19th, and a running back, Kellen Mond, comes out of the game testing positive, and he ran the ball 23 times and was tackled by these different guys, and he threw it, and he was in the huddle, and he was on the sideline, all those sorts of things. If you take all those people out, Texas A&M isn't playing for 2 weeks, and Mississippi State isn't playing for 2 weeks, and can you run a season that way? That's a question of what works.
If that's the standard, and I know the NCAA's guidance is that, but then, yeah, this isn't really going to happen. I mean, that's just one test takes out a team. I mean, locker room, bus. I mean, I guess maybe you can be like, hey, it was the punter and the offensive line wasn't near the punter. But that stuff to me, that can't be the standard because it just.
Punter. He lives with the kicker and the holder and the long
snapper.
That's
true.
You can't just invent those guys. Now, look, they're not as rare as three techniques, but you're finding the best high school soccer player in your student body, like that, who isn't on the team to all of a sudden like get drafted to kick against LSU.
No, you can't. But that's the thing. They're all together. And, they're going to come in and they're going to come into contact with someone. One of the things, like we made this joke last week about the college kids saying, well, I won't go to a party. Well, what's a party? Right. Like,
yeah.
If you had like, okay, let's just put it this way. If you walk up to a dorm room and there's six dudes in there all playing video games, eating pizza, you don't think of that as a party. That's right. Just Tuesday. But if you're married or you got it, you know, you have six guys over your house and pizza and everyone sits around the living room, your wife's going to think, or your husband, that's a party.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it may not. They know it's not a party. A party is like 400 people in the basement of a fraternity.
Yeah.
All right. That might be. No, everything's a party at college. That's it. Right. So how are you going to handle this? And the range, like, I wanted to tip my cap to West Virginia for a bold move in the Fauci Cup last week. 28 players.
Yeah. Strong effort by the Mountaineers.
Coming in a little late, right there, you know, but a good effort. Good effort. Yeah. 28
Gordon
strong.
Gordon Gee straightening his bow tie saying, don't forget about us.
Yeah. Second half team, apparently. Take me home, country road. But then Notre Dame keeps coming up with nothing.
Yeah.
What are they doing? Like, Notre Dame is as clean as a whistle over there. They're eating broccoli and stuff. I don't know what's going on.
Notre Dame is tanking the Fauci Cup.
Last place in the Fauci Cup. West Virginia went through that thing like, man, forget it. I don't know what happened. The disparity is going to be ridiculous. If it's one guy, yeah, this isn't going to work. But they've got to come up with a little better number than that. They got to have some kind of risk or else don't try, because to start with that, I mean, it's implausible to me that Notre Dame's got zero. Good job.
Yeah.
I don't know how you're doing it, but
they've been in a hotel for camp, Dan, or for this period. They've been in a hotel. Yeah. They essentially, in a way, have been quarantined. The issue with college is camp can be a lot like being quarantined. The problem is, like, right when you need the players to be healthy the most, you have tens of thousands of other students going back to where they're all living. And that's just the the one thing I can't wrap my mind around. But to go back to the contact tracing quickly, the NFL contact tracing is essentially 2 days with frequent testing for everybody that's been in contact. It's interesting, 2 days and 2 weeks is just significant and crucial. And you guys can disagree with this, but I don't think the mechanics are in place in college because of the leadership void at the NCAA, which has suggested 2 weeks and most people have followed, to state guidelines, to county guidelines, to local guidelines, to presidential oversight, to ADs, to liability. I don't see 14 moving to single digits anytime in the near future to make the college season more tenable. Like that speaks to what Dan very wisely said early on in this, like the long odds of college football being played. College football has always had the longest odds of being played. And it's reasons like this. You have this geographic disparity. You have no one in charge. The virus is raging in Florida and it's vacant in Wyoming, but everybody's going to play under the same set of rules. But if there's one rule that's really going to be critical to impede college football going forward, it's where the contact tracing is right now and the inherent difficulty of changing that.
And it's not going to be any contract. Like, what hotel is West Virginia staying in where they got 28 of them? That's not a very good hotel.
the Lodge. What's your lodge that we've talked about on here?
Great Wolf Lodge. They might
Thank
be.
You. Thank you. They're in the Great Wolf Lodge, Morgantown. I bet there is one.
There might be.
The Great Wolf Lodge is a pretty gritty place, but I don't even think Morgantown's aspirational enough for that.
They got a federal prison in Morgantown. I think they got a lower rate than the West Virginia football team over there. I mean, don't go to the Great Wolf Lodge. But look, I just quickly, and I'll go to Pat. Like, the NFL is going to – the NFL's owners – the NFL is a $9 billion business, and their owners own the country. Man, they got all the money. And they were balking at giving daily tests. The players had to raise hell, and it was a big, huge union fight, and they didn't want to do daily testing because they're like, it's going to be too expensive. And something's too expensive for the NFL. It's really expensive. So This is where
they just caved on that Monday afternoon, by the way, Dan.
Yeah, no, they're going to do it.
That just happened.
But they fought it because they're like, nah, we don't want it. So how are you going to afford it? And then how do you afford? You can't just test the football players, unless the NCAA cancels the seasons, these other seasons, you have to test all the teams. The New York Giants only care about the New York Giants. So everyone's got to stay at the Great Wolf Lodge, I guess.
But that's the problem is, that you've got on every campus, you have 16 to 30 some teams, and you have this – what we have seen, this precipitously declining revenue curve, they are losing money left and right, with then the added expense curve of we're going to test everybody a lot. And it's going to be hundreds of athletes in dozens of sports. And that's a bad calculus for a lot of these athletic directors. That's why they're looking, trying to figure out how you possibly make this thing work. I think they have to commit to the testing because you have to, first of all, you got to be healthy and you got to be safe. And secondly, they've got to do whatever they can to have a football season because they need the money.
And the big thing about testing that shouldn't be understated is right now in these places where the virus is raging, you can't get tests back in a short period of time.
That is so
like,
true.
And quite frankly, the backup left guard at Florida shouldn't be having tests over someone who, is someone asymptomatic, shouldn't be having tests over folks who are in the crosshairs, including healthcare workers, frontline workers, etc. So
wait, this is college football. This is important. Of course they should. We don't care about these frontline medical workers. It's a too deep to be had.
So I really think, and we said some version of this on the show here, like I am skeptical of college football in the fall until daily testing at an efficient expense rate is available. Like daily testing that you can get back quickly, that you can run yourself, that is not like just overwhelmingly expensive is a way I can see we can have college football without a bubble. Until then, it's hard to see a path there.
Yeah. They're going to try to find a path. We'll see.
They're going to try. All right. Well, who's not trying? California high schools. They punted to the spring. Georgia pushed it back 2 weeks. It's America.
America.
America. Here in the great state of Michigan, they're just playing. Let's do it. At least that's the plan now. I don't know. Interested on the California thing. Football and basketball now pushed to the spring. Now, for our purposes in college sports, we're interested in the recruits. Now, the top line guys are already known and are already heavily recruited, but the base, the core of college football, of a college football roster, is there's a lot of recruiting being done, but there's not really offers. And, you know, it's a silent offer. It's kind of an offer. And then they watch their senior film. They see how they grew. They see how their thing. And then you sign and you get your whole team. If they're, and I don't know where this extend. I don't know if the Texas is talking about not having a college football or high school football season in the fall. How in the world is this going to affect recruiting? Because without game tape of your senior year, without the 7-on-7s and the camps and all of that, without the ability to really take campus visits, this is going to be an enormous challenge and could be a real, like, just a wild impact on who's going where. If you've got the wrong kind of scouting or the wrong info, you could take a bunch of kids that can't play for you. And at the same time, you could get kids that are really good that shouldn't normally be playing for you. This is like a minefield and an opportunity to me. If these big states don't play college high school football, and then you're trying to sign guys late or you're trying to figure it out. Like, I mean, you could be signing really good players next May, June, like grabbing guys in late spring, which never happens. So whole recruiting calendar's in flux, right?
Totally. No, everything related to recruiting is thrown up in the air. And yeah, in California now, you are looking at this and saying, we have got very little to evaluate guys on. And for male athletes ages 16, 17, there is a lot going on in terms of physical maturation, mental and emotional maturation as well, but that can turn you into a different looking player than what they have seen, what they saw on film that's a year old or a year and a half old or whatever. So this, I mean, I do not envy recruiters trying to wade through this situation, who they want to cast their 25 scholarships on and who they don't. And I just think we're going to be looking, there's going to be more mistakes made and there's going to be even more transfers. We've seen, you know, the transfer market skyrocket. Well, it's going to be even higher after this. And I don't think, you know, boy, if the immediate transfer waiver doesn't pass in January, I think that everybody's going to get a waiver, because all you got to do is just hold up a sign that says virus. That's my reason why I couldn't make my visits. I couldn't make a good decision. This is where I chose. Now I need to leave. So I just think that it's going to be, this is almost like a just cast lots out there, see what happens, and then do it all over again for a lot of people in a year.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. By the way, Pat's been talking a lot with his hands lately. It's been fun to see. When he did those like ascending and descending charts, I think the 40s have been playing a lot of twist. Yeah, I think the 40s have been playing a lot of twister at home during the pandemic, because Pat looked like he had some new flexibility there. Maybe a little more yoga in his life. I really think from the macro, to take Pat's point and double on this to go with the recruiting piece, I think college athletics are going to look radically different in 2 years. And we haven't spent as much time looking at it because, you know, 90% of the attention of everything that's happened in the past 4 months has been towards the virus, and rightfully so. But if you look at the upcoming transfer rules are expected to pass in January, if you look at name, image, and likeness that are supposed to pass in some semblance in the upcoming months, and you look at the social injustice issues that have really impacted the environment pretty significantly in a short period of time, like when we mercifully and hopefully wake up in 2 years and are back to some sort of normal, like the college athletics as we know them are going to be indelibly changed.
Just quick update on the NFL thing. We said that NFL was going to test daily. They're testing daily for the first 2 weeks of training camp. And okay, that's it. And then if the rate drops low enough for players, it'll go to every other day. And then it may tier down after that.
Do they define low enough? I mean, is there
under 5%.
Okay. Okay.
And then everyone will have, there's a bunch of different things. They're spending a fortune on it, though.
Oh, breaking news real quick. Bill Hancock was just quoted in a Dennis Dodd story. Clearly listens to the podcast. Quote, when you're in the middle of a blizzard, you think it's going to snow forever, but it's not. August, we'll get here. End quote.
It's a big fan
there
of
you go. The Wetzel blizzard analogy coming from his good friend, Bill Hancock.
That's good. Thank you listening, Bill.
You guys vacation together, Dan, don't you? Is that where he picked that up? He picked that up in Traverse City, sipping a Busch Light with you on the dock.
Yeah, I think it's something like that. He's a good man. Good guy. Good guy. Nice man. The blizzard, the middle of the blizzard. Does feel like he'll snow forever. See, I don't know about that. But he lives in Kansas. They got a lot of blizzards out there. Anyway, yeah, I just think this is going to be wild. I mean, this whole bit. One other thing as we go back, the point, do you think the NCAA, like, what are they going to do with these non-revenue sports? Our focus is on football. People listening are football. But with Title IX and different, just the quote-unquote optics that always matter, I mean, how do you do daily testing on field hockey teams and all? Like, how do you afford all this stuff? Or do you think the NCAA will bail these schools out and
cancel the season
or do something? Because it's like I said there, the Giants only care about the Giants. They also do not have 11 other sports playing this fall. It's just, it's just the New York Giants. And so, and they're freaked. That's the thing. Like, the New York Giants, it's not a small operation. Is not sure how to do this, and they don't have all these other things. So if they don't know, it would certainly be a lot easier if you didn't have to do the other sports. But how do you do that legally?
See, that's the thing. I mean, the question's legitimate, but you can't just say because you're field hockey, you don't get tested as much. Now, if you're like, they put out these risk rankings, like low risk, moderate risk, high risk sports. And if you're in a high risk sport, which is football, all the other high-risk sports have to be tested at this commensurate level. I just don't see how you could possibly get away with saying, we just don't care about you enough to test you every day if we're going to test everybody else, or, you know, or once a week or twice a week or whatever the number is. So they will be duty-bound, I think, to do that level of testing for everyone who applies to that level of risk. And again, that's where expense becomes prohibitive at a time when revenues are plummeting. I don't want to be a college administrator right now. I don't want to be an AD. I don't want to be a president. I don't want to be anybody involved in having to make these kind of decisions. But Title IX, the federal law, and I would think some level of common decency, and everybody on campus who pays attention to whether or not the non-revenue sports are treated as well as the revenue sports will be paying attention.
And one of the few shows of power, leadership, et cetera, that the NCAA has, they will, in the next 2 weeks, push the fall championships across the board. And see, it's like classic NCAA to wait for the decision to be made for it before it actually makes a decision. They would never be forward-thinking and bold. They will just basically wait till everything's made and then pat themselves on the back for a good job when they make the obvious decision. And the decisions by the America East, by the Big East, by the Atlantic 10, the WCC, and we could fill in some blanks if you wanted, for all of them to push their fall sports back is going to essentially nudge the NCAA in the upcoming weeks, after I'm sure many Zoom calls and deliberations, to push their fall championships back. Now, obviously, you know, our frequent listeners would know the college football playoff is not run by the NCAA. It's run by a television contract through a conglomeration of all the conferences. So it allows the leaders around college athletics to really focus on football, which financially is all that really matters. And quite frankly, the ADs, I think, would be happy to just focus on what really matters right now. And so that way there's some of the, what about women's soccer questions get brushed aside, and they can lock in on, you know, on the one sport that could save a multi-billion dollar business.
It's a funny bit because it's, you know, the obvious thing as well. All the sports are equal. All the kids are trying hard. They're all students at this university. Everything's equal. And it's like, yeah, but one pays the bill. What are we going to do? How do we figure this out? Because without football, there isn't the others. And it's dicey. All right. Back to recruiting. We're all over the place today. School that is doing really well. I wanted to talk a little recruiting today. It's always recruiting season, even in a pandemic.
It's all we got, Dan.
It's all we got. Ohio State just landed defensive back out of Georgia, Jordan Hancock, 4-star, who had been committed to Clemson, decommitted from Clemson, which is a rarity. Clemson, they like to brag, their guys don't bail out. He did, and he committed to Ohio State. Now, you know, it's one player, but they are on a tear. They continue to be on a tear. They have 3 5-star recruits of just the 17 that Rivals has. Rivals only has 17. Respect Mike Farrell and all of his guys for not loading up with 50, 60 5-stars and giving those things away. Usually they end up with about 30, but he said, unless I watch him personally in our camps, which all got canceled, or a lot of them, not giving out that 5-star. So Ohio State has 3 of the top 17 recruits. They've got a bunch of guys. They're number one in every single recruiting ranking. And I guess what I wanted to ask was, to me, the one of the questions on Ryan Day taking over for Urban Meyer was, could he keep up that level of recruiting? So I don't think there's any question that Urban Meyer is one of the 2 or 3 best coaches of this generation. He's, you know, he's won multiple national championships at multiple schools, undefeated seasons, done a tremendous job. And so you take over for him, and even a little bit of a step back is somewhat forgivable. It's hard to be Urban Meyer. Other than Dabo and Saban, none have been, and Dabo hasn't done it as long. So you're looking at this recruiting, and they're recruiting as good, if not better, than what they were doing when Urban Meyer had it rolling. And so I thought that's a big step for Ryan Day, and this recruiting class that's coming together, if it holds up, is a real show of force for him and Ohio State.
Yeah, I really think it's been impressive, Dan, what they've been able to do from a recruiting standpoint. And you know, the biggest knock on Ryan Day taking over that job was he didn't have the aura of Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer walks in your living room. If you're in LA, Atlanta, Dallas, he's the guy who coached Tim Tebow, the guy who coached Alex Smith, the guy who won multiple 3 national titles. Like, that is a sell in itself. Ryan Day is the Ohio State coach, but he doesn't have the aura. And so what they've been able to do as a staff, and for this latest flip, I give Kerry Combs credit. They brought Kerry back from the NFL and in the staff shakeup from last year to be the defensive coordinator. Is Ryan Day has put the same amount of time and energy into recruiting that Urban Meyer did, and then obviously assembled the staff, especially Mark Pantone, who's obviously the director of recruiting there. He's been around a long time, and really is one of the best 3 guys in that space in the country. And they've been able to not miss a beat, which is really a stunning thing. I mean, the biggest thing that yields recruiting success is results. And if you just look at the defensive back position where they flipped a kid from Clemson from. Jeff Okuda, first-round pick in 2020. Damon Arnett, first-round pick in 2020. You go back to 2018, Denzel Ward, 4th pick in the draft. Marshawn Lattimore in 2017, 11th pick in the draft. Eli Apple in 2016 was the number 10 pick in the draft. And then then you go back a little bit further. You got Bradley Roby, and that's kind of pre-Meyer recruiting. But you really just have, like, a brand almost of defensive backs. So that breeds more defensive back recruits and more success. And so, you know, I give them a lot of credit for keeping that momentum going.
Yeah, the thing that impresses me is that, you know, Urban, one of his great successes at Ohio State was branching them out and making them a true national force in recruiting. You know, they got to the point where they could go to Florida and they could go to Texas and they could get guys from all over. They're by far the most successful of any Midwestern program with that, other than Notre Dame, which, you know, has just always operated that way. But now, I mean, they have expanded it, I think, even more under Ryan Day, to the point now they can recruit nationally the way Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, anybody does, maybe the best of any of them. Here's the list of guys that they've got, this is the sum of the states where they've gotten guys from in this current 2021 commitment class. Georgia, Arizona, Kentucky, Florida, Virginia, Tennessee, North Carolina, Missouri, Texas, and Colorado. And really interesting, since the pandemic shut everything down, which I always refer to March 12th as the date that happens, all of their commitments have been out of state. And they've gotten 4 4-star DBs in the last 4 months. I mean, they're going and getting people from wherever, at a time when everything is shut down. So their reach is impressive. Very, very impressive. And this time, when you think maybe you got to pull it in and stay closer to home to get guys, or guys from want to stay closer to home, that's not what Ohio State's doing.
One more thing to add on the DBs. So Kerry Combs comes back from the Titans, where he'd been defensive backfield coach. Kerry Combs is one of the most unique characters in college football that I've ever met. Pat, have you been around him?
Oh, yeah, I love him.
That's
correct.
He's just a fierce ball of energy. The best Kerry Combs story I've ever heard was that he has, you know, that thing, the perfect push-up, like the infomercial? So when Kerry Combs works out in the Ohio State weight room, he uses the perfect push-up. And in between his sets of perfect push-ups, he drinks hot coffee.
Yeah.
True story. Black coffee.
All right.
Hot black coffee to cool down. That describes the energy of Kerry Combs to it.
Kills the COVID. Two of their three five stars are from out of state, you know, so it's impressive recruiting haul for Ohio State. They're doing really well, and Ryan Day is obviously connecting with these players in a way that's Urban Meyer-esque, if you will. The other big recruiting news the last week, since we're doing recruiting talk, was the Brockermeyer twins of Texas, James and Tommy, choosing to go to Alabama, both Ohio offensive linemen. I'm sorry. Tommy's a five-star. James is a four. I wonder if that's like a sibling bitterness over that. I don't know.
There's 3 inches difference in height, too, so they guarantee there's some sibling bitterness over that.
Yeah, but the younger one would have to have a hard – the smaller one would have to have a hard time there. Fighting uphill. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, let's create some brotherly discord, because why not? We're just such a nice podcast. Anyway, congrats on both of them. Their dad played at Texas, though. They're from Texas. Texas is not doing terribly in recruiting. They got the 12th best class, but I hate seeing guys that good walk out of the state to go to Alabama. Ohio State also has a five-star offensive lineman from the state. I don't really know what to discuss with Alabama getting five-star players. I mean, of course.
Dog bites one of the, man.
Yeah, here we go. Shoot off a flare, whatever. Any concern in Texas, or is there enough kids and they can close and do fine? Or is this, you would have thought maybe they'd have it rolling a little better. I mean, I guess I could pick on Texas Christian for not getting them, or anybody, Texas A&M or anybody else, but Texas is where they had a legacy going. So is there any worry with Tom Herman? Okay, cool, hook him.
I don't know how applicable it is here, because I have not watched Brockermeyer brother O-line high school film, thank God. But there's a great saying in recruiting, take the calf to get the cow. And I don't know if it applies here, but that's one of my favorite things, where you take like the middling six man on a high school basketball team to get his best friend who's the stud, or his brother who's the stud, or whatever it is. So anyway, that's like one of the great little sayings in the recruiting lexicon. So I just wanted to, that just put a smile on my face thinking about it today. You know, like, it's a bad day for Herb Hand, the O-line coach at Texas, to lose those guys. They were clearly priority targets for the program all along. Texas is 12th right now in recruiting, which is about where Texas should be. They should be higher probably, but they're first in the Big 12, and they only have one O-line recruit. So you've got to think there was some space to take these guys, and they're going to have to accommodate otherwise. That's been a pretty distinct weakness since Tom Herman took over the program. They've taken multiple grad transfers. Their O-line was just dysfunctionally horrific that first season they were there. It has gotten moderately better, but by no means would you say it's been dominant in any way or a strength in any way. And Texas, quite frankly, just hasn't produced a lot of NFL offensive linemen in the past 20 years. It was really a defining weakness of Mack Brown. They went through a long stretch of not getting anybody drafted in that spot. And now maybe is some of it like Texas doesn't produce the O-linemen it used to because of all the spread they play? I doubt it. There's good offensive linemen in Texas. So that Texas needs to do better there.
Yeah. I don't know what was in the, the hearts and minds of the Brockermeyer twins, but that's got to hurt. And it's got to, you know, this is, well, the thing, and again, I don't know if this was the deciding factor in their recruitment, but guys that are really, really good want to play in the NFL, and they want to go to places that can tell them, we will get you to the NFL. And you go back and look at Alabama recent history in that area. If you're an offensive lineman, Jedrick Wills was the number 10 player picked in the last draft. The year before that, Jonah Williams was the number 11 player picked. In 2017, Cam Robinson, offensive tackle, was a second-round pick. The year before that, Ryan Kelly was a first-round pick. And you can go back through the years. Cyrus Quanjo, second round. DJ Fluker and Chance Warmack, both in the top 11. I mean, they get offensive linemen drafted. And that's a selling point that if you can't match up to that, if you're Texas, that's probably hurting you. I don't know whether, again, I can't say definitively it hurt them with these guys, but it's not something that's going to help you if you can't show that you can get alignment to the NFL.
So I just Googled Kafkow recruiting just to see if there were any examples of that. And I got an article from Beef Magazine. Treat your cows like five-star recruits. And I'm immediately going to get a subscription
to Beef
mind.
Magazine.
Nope, it wasn't. But they do have a football picture there.
What magazine? What
Beef,
magazine?
B-E-E-F. Beef Magazine.
Beef Magazine.
Don't tell HR, because that could just go some wrong ways.
Yeah, I would have thought that had a whole different meaning if someone...
Don't try to put that subscription on your expense report, okay?
That's it. It's a good tip. From someone who is the master of Yahoo expense reports, I appreciate all the sage advice.
Beef Magazine. Wow. That was scary. Well, that is a... All right. Treat your cat like a five-star recruit. All right. Well, I got one more recruit.
Okay.
But he's not a recruit yet. He's not a recruit yet. But you may have heard of him. This is from a little football family down in Louisiana. His name is Arch Manning.
Mm. Last name sounds familiar.
Sounds familiar. They play a little ball. The family plays a little ball. Grandson of Archie. Nephew of Eli. Nephew of Peyton. Son of Cooper. Arch Manning is 2023, so he's going to be a sophomore. He threw 34 touchdowns as a freshman at Isidore Newman, the Manning family high school, basically. And so
I'm sure there's been other graduates, by the way. Like, it's a pretty prestigious private school down there.
Other people went there? I don't know that anyone did. I think it's just
doesn't matter.
It's a homeschool run out of their run out of the conservatory in the Manning family.
Just keep going. We need all. Have you seen NFL quarterback play? We need more Mannings.
More Mannings, fewer McCowns, right?
Yes.
Eli has been a massive disappointment by only having daughters. Come on, Eli.
Peyton's got a son.
We need...
Coach him up.
We need more Mannings, okay? So Arch Manning is... I have watched film on Arch Manning. Arch Manning can... looks pretty good for a freshman. Check this stuff out. He looks like someone who came out of the womb throwing a football and then has some excellent coaches. He's not allowed to be recruited. Check this out. The Manning family's like, no, there will be no recruiting. His quote is, we're not doing that right now. I think it was. I got to find in the story. Excellent story on rivals.com about this. But basically, coaches are not allowed to call him. He's not visiting anywhere. He's just doing his thing. There's a lot that goes into recruiting. It's all about the best fit. We're not going into it much yet. I want to enjoy my high school experience, and that's what I'm doing. Wherever I go, I know they'll support me. It's good. It's good to be Arch Manning. You kind of just know everybody wants you. But zero recruiting. Cooper Manning, father of the year, trying to keep things. Yeah. Like, you know, he didn't want the attention on his son, which is why he named him Arch Manning. And made him a quarterback and sent him to Isidore. Oh, no one will notice. Just people will blend in. You'll totally blend in.
Oh, darn it. He's good. The word got out.
So good job by Cooper, who we like.
Yeah.
But I'm going to tell you what. You may not be any recruiting on Arch, but we're going to talk about recruiting Arch.
Oh, yeah.
No, because this is going to be the greatest. It's going to be one of the all-time great recruiting derbies. And we're going to be in on it. This is Southern royalty, man.
I am proposing. Yeah, we cover this obsessively as a podcast until he commits, and then we go to the Kingpin Bar in New Orleans and get Cooper and do a live pod from there, because Cooper has been known to visit the Kingpin. Cooper is a lot of fun. He is a fun guy, funny guy, has been very protective of his son for good reason, you know, has really tried to make sure that he's kind of built a little bit of a protective cocoon around him from an attention standpoint, really hasn't wanted too much too soon because he's seen it all. I mean, you know, it's not like they need some ego boost of, hey, people are talking about my son. They're already going to talk about him, and he knows what it's like to be from a famous football family. So it'll happen on their terms, but by golly, we'll be there at the end. The podcast will be there. I think we should be there for the commitment announcement.
Well, I have sources close to the Manning recruitment who've told me that Cooper has actually been in touch with Pat Forty, who, you know, had a similar situation with his daughter, Brooke, who's now a swimmer at Stanford. Pat had to hold off Swim Swam magazine because they were so all over Brooke during her recruitment. Pat had to set up certain times in certain areas. So I'm sure there's a lot of connectivity in those in those two places, as those recruitments are very similar, on a very similar plane.
The swim paparazzi, relentless. You know, just she couldn't step out of the house without being swarmed to try to find out who's leading, who's leaning. Where are we going?
Where are you going? What are you thinking?
Yeah.
Swim Swam has to know.
So let's go through the contenders here. All right. I think in our hearts, we want Tulane to come through. Write your own legacy, make your own story. They'll name a street after you in the French Quarter, even though Tulane's uptown. You get the point. LSU, obviously, there's going to be a huge tug down the road from Coach O. You know, Coach O could be a senator by then, too. So maybe he'll just have like an internal state mandate to send him there. Ole Miss, obvious reasons. You got uncle and a grandpa there. And dad was a good receiver there until injuries hurt his career. Tennessee, for obvious reasons. Don't sell David Cutcliffe short. Like, this could be the bow in Cutcliffe's legacy. Duke's not a bad school either. And there's some normalcy at Duke too. You could hide a little bit there. And then, you know, Stanford, all jokes aside, like that is the place where the sons of famous Americans and daughters of famous Americans have gone. You know, high profile stars like John McEnroe and Tiger Woods have obviously thrived there. Chelsea Clinton went to school there. I think Steve Jobs' son went there. There's just been that place has been the perfect incubator. If you want your son to live a normal, uninterrupted life because of his family's fame, there's no better place in America to go than that.
Well, they definitely won't care if he's at the football facility. I mean, yeah, no one's going to show up. Yeah, Stanford's a good counter to all the local fans that get all over you. You know, like you go down to you're a high school kid, you go down and get the burger place and the manager, why don't you go to State U? And you say, well, I'm going to Stanford. Right, and then it's like shuts them off because the academics are so good.
That ends the argument real quick.
You know, there are all these schools. We got an honors college here now. And, yeah, no, you don't. Not really. Not compared to Stanford. Yeah, Stanford is a possible, I guess. I don't know. We're just making this up. We're literally making up recruiting.
We're totally making it up. Since they're not going to do it, we'll do it for them. Right, that's what we're here.
What SEC, let's keep them in the South, okay?
Okay.
Which school would be he least likely to attend in the SEC? Well, no ACC schools allowed. Sorry, Clemson. I think Clemson will have a crack, but we'll see. Mississippi State, is that the least likely spot? Is it?
Yes.
No, I mean, Mike Leach. You're going to get Mike Leach. Like, at least you know your son's going to throw the ball 10,000 times a season for four seasons there. So I would think they're more likely. Definitely Lane Kiffin has a chance because he's already in the DMs, right? You know what I mean? Like Lane is already ignoring all the rules the parents set up and doing that. I would say the least likely school is South Carolina. I mean, what quarterback heritage does South Carolina have?
You cannot be a legend at Ole Miss. Two of them, your uncle and your grandfather. He's named after Archie Manning. The speed limit on the campus of Ole Miss is 18 because of Archie Manning's number. You can't then go to Mississippi State.
Yeah, no, that's not happening. I don't care who the coach is or how many times they throw the ball, especially in a system that isn't necessarily pro-friendly. Uh-uh. No, Mississippi State is out. There, some more hand signals.
Sorry.
Pete. Oh, stop. It's not 2004. The system isn't pro-friendly. It worked pretty well for Gardner Minshew. Like,
That's one.
I would also throw Alabama in there. Archie does not like Alabama. Handed him his worst loss at Ole Miss. Eli had some trouble with Alabama. Peyton doesn't like Alabama. There's not a whole lot of love for the Tide in the Manning family.
Is it in the family, Sully, or is that your Alabama
heat? Yeah, we're hearing a little bit of orange-tinted version of the Manning experience here.
Manning family insider. Sully, the producer. Yeah. I don't know. You want to know that you're doing a midsummer podcast is when you're making up recruiting speculation
and then yelling on a high school sophomore to be
sophomore
whose family is not allowing recruiting right now.
That's it. The less they allow, the more room there is for us. We're taking over.
Well, this is going to be awesome. We are going to cover it. So there you go. Arch, you are free to call in. Cooper, we'll take any Manning.
Any of them.
Eli.
Olivia, isn't that the
Peyton,
mom? Olivia Manning.
This is it. This is going to be your
Grandma?
Ground yeah. zero, central location for Arch Manning. Could change the fortunes of entire states. It's going to be incredible. Kid can throw a ball. Go online and check it out. It's pretty good tape. I mean, he's like 14. It's like, holy cow. All right. That's got to be our podcast. We are literally out of topics. Well, we got a few. This was silly enough. We'll do this, the stupid stuff. We'll save it.
I think we're still riding the afterglow of the Guntown Kangaroo surviving. So that's going to carry the news of the silly for 2 weeks, you know, for two episodes.
It's true. And I bet he gets loose again down in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah.
Makes a run for the beach. Guy's trying to go to the beach and they don't let him. They put him in a cop car.
This is a plea to our listeners. Tweet us some news of the weird. We need some juice here. Like,
yeah, we need you guys are in the nooks and crannies of America. You're out there. We know. Okay, give us your local news. We got some problems. All right. Please subscribe and leave us nice reviews and hope you all have a good week. We will talk to y'all later in the week.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering DC scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.